Together. I'm Michael Hall.
And I'm Andy Davis.
We want to welcome you to the Day Advantage, the D&D podcast for two old school dads. Talk about new school D&D play.
And magic.
Well, and a dad joke.
Magical dad jokes. Now we're going to have to dig hard through our little thing of trying to find some magical dad jokes.
That's right. I will conjure a dad joke.
Yeah, I will conjure.
Alakazam. So, Andy, we have decided to do a co-build today. What were we thinking about co-building?
We're going to talk wizards today. We're going to build us a magic user, high magic user.
Nice. Referencing our battle royale that we just did when we wanted to use characters that we had built, and we wanted to use our characters that we had built, and we realized that neither one of us had built really a wizard.
Yeah.
We have the one with Babara. Of course, our blades from our co-builds.
Yes.
But we hadn't really built a true, just straight up wizard. So I think it's about time.
Yeah, I think, you know, wizards are super, super interesting. You know, there's so many different schools that are available.
And what's interesting about wizards, and I think, I mean, first of all, they're unquestionably, particularly as you start getting above 10th and 11th level, unquestionably the most powerful characters in the game.
Yes.
They can be a little bit hit or miss at times because magic can sometimes not work. But they have so many options and they're so powerful. And the spells you start getting above 11th level are bananas.
Bonkers, right? When you and I first started playing, as we talked about, like old school D&D, one of the things, they were always very powerful, but they were also like incredibly fragile, especially at low levels. Like it was hard to get a wizard, a magic, or in back in the days, they would call them a magic user before we had so many different variants of magic users. But basically, when it was just a magic user, it was very difficult to get a magic user above third or fourth level because everybody else is like gaining hit points there. And the combat was so lethal in those earlier games. It was really quite difficult to get somebody who was good at a much higher level.
Unless you started at that higher level.
Yeah, unless you just built them at that level. But to get up to that was quite a challenge.
It was a much more deadly game back then. I don't miss the super deadly because it was always so disappointing to lose your character.
Yeah, it still is. You can, whether you like old school rules or not, I mean, people do like those sort of more hardcore games. Yeah. But I do like the ability to have a little more flexibility in how those things happen.
You know, I think it really depends on what style of game you're playing in. Yeah. I think if you're playing in a short run campaign or a one shot, having characters die off pretty quickly and having them be interchangeable, not nearly as problematic as if you are designing a long-term campaign for your characters and they're always dying.
That is a problem.
It's also a problem as a writer, as the DM, because you're building hooks based on that character's background. Yes. And if characters are constantly dying, they don't necessarily have the same backgrounds, right?
Different motivations, different things. Yeah. But there's a great story about a kid who was playing and his character dies in like the first session, and the DM's like, "I'm really sorry, your character died." And he goes, and he like takes the character sheet and he just writes Junior after the name of the character, and he's now the son of the character who died, and he's exactly the same. And he's just, "I'm back, and what's your motivation? I'm here to avenge my father." Which, apocryphal or not, I just think it is like the best. Like that's a good chef's kiss. Okay, but let's get back to wizards. Let's talk
wizards.
A little bit more wizards and what they are. So in the player's handbook, we describe wizards as they are supreme magic users. They're united as a class by the different spells they cast and the fact that they have to learn their spells, you know. So sorcerers, their magic is coming from like an innate source. It's coming from their blood. They just know stuff and they do it. A warlock is receiving magic as part of a transaction with their patron, and so they're essentially gifted that magic that they're able to use by virtue of their patron. But a wizard, they're someone who is studying, they're someone who is doing arcane research, they're the most erudite, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, they're one of the few classes users, other than the artificer, who focus on intelligence, which is an important stat for them. They also are really flexible.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about them being really powerful, they're also really powerful in utility because once they start getting a lot of spells, they can do a lot of things that will help the adventurer succeed that aren't just blowing stuff up.
Yeah. Conversely, they're one of the more challenging types of PCs to play because you have so many options, especially at those higher levels. Like, you know, we talk, sometimes we'll talk about like how, you know, a fighter at a high level, you know, that you're rolling your dice, you know, you're like, oh, I've got four attacks, you know, oh, I've got, I'm going to use my action surge. It's another four attacks. I've got all this other stuff going on and you're rolling. Conversely, the wizard is the guy who's flipping through all their spell cards, trying to find that perfect spell for that perfect occasion. That's also fun to use or whatever. Right. I was trying to remember as we were getting started on talking about this particular co-build, just thinking about different wizards, like from fiction or, you know, that we might, that you might use as like different sorts of models as you're thinking about the character you might want to build. And, you know, so there's stuff like Merlin and Morgana Le Fay, like Voldemort's another example. You've got like Gandalf and Saruman from, we've got David Copperfield and Doug Hennig. You know, if you're talking more illusionist types,
right.
I think it would be funny. You know, and then in more recent fiction, we've got stuff like Harry Dresden from the Jim Butcher things, which is, we talked briefly about him in the past, that he's a war mage type. I don't know if you've read, have you read the Dragonlance novels?
I have not. They were never really, cornerstone to my childhood.
One of the central characters of especially the first trilogy is this guy, Raistlin Majere, who he has a twin brother who is more of a barbarian type. And he is this like physically weak character, but very, very intelligent, and goes off and frankly almost becomes the villain of the whole thing, where he is so focused on this getting all the knowledge and taking it all in and becoming as powerful as he possibly can. And that's kind of a central theme, at least in fiction, that pops up a lot around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Saruman's a good guy until he's not.
Until he's not, right? And so I do think like that is one of the things that makes wizards, depending on how you choose to play your wizard, you know, really interesting, is they are acquisitive by nature, but they are trying to acquire knowledge. And they're also very smart. So it's really fun to play a character that's like too smart for its own, for their own good, who is like, oh, I need all of it, right? I need to have a library. I need to go to the library of the gods. And I really don't care about the consequences of doing that in order to get the knowledge that I need to forward. Or whatever that thing is that I want to do. There's this interesting track there when you look at the fiction, where there are a lot of the wizards are like Merlin. He's empowering a lot of these guys, but he's also making a lot of bad decisions, and he's not necessarily a good guy,
right?
which I find super interesting. So that's all. That is all to say that wizards are a lot of fun to play. They can be really interesting, especially as they gain more capability as they get up into higher levels. Once you get to the place where you're casting the third level spells, you really do start to, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. You know, a friend of mine was playing, we fondly referred to him as a dirt wizard, because he just took all the earth spells and he was, I'm not going to do anything about blowing stuff up. It's just all going to be earth related stuff.
Let's talk about that, Eddie, because like I have some ideas and my ideas, there were sort of two big influential things that I started to think through, and we could take them in different directions. Yeah. But the first one was, I'm a huge fan of Avatar, the cartoon series.
Yeah.
Just massive fan like that. Yeah. And both season one and then Legend of Korra as well. Both differently good, but just really, really good.
Yep.
And I love how the world of magic they've created. Now, granted, those are a little bit more like sorcerers, but there's no reason why we can't be influenced by that.
Yeah.
And say, here's a whole world where magic is. And I mean, you could have talked about an Earthbender, right?
Yeah.
You go to World of Warcraft or Diablo. You build a certain style of wizard, right? You build an ice wizard or a fire wizard or an earth wizard. So I was really thinking that we might just, partially because it's a little more focused, because wizards can be all over the map.
Yeah.
That we start with the idea that we want to build something that's really focused around an elemental style. And I have a couple of ideas where we could come into it from different directions, some very obvious, but then others maybe not so obvious.
I think that sounds great. I mean, I'll give a quick rundown of all the different schools, and I'm not going to get too much into them, but I just want to let people understand just how broad
other than clerics, the most classes, right? I think.
The most subclasses. We have all these different arcane traditions. These arcane traditions are referred to as schools. There is blade singing, which is really around there. It's like swordplay and dance. Like these are people, this is like the elven guy who's using his sword to cast magic. You know, we talked a little bit about this when we did our go build with our Loxodon. There is chronurgy, which is focused on the manipulation of time. So these are people who are essentially, they're given the ability to like freeze people, do other
stuff. And that's sorts of from Matt Mercer and the Critical Role extension, I think.
Yes, right? I think so. I think that's really the first time it, I think it had existed in probably Dragon Magazine kind of stuff. But when you think about this ninth level spell Time Stop, that's clearly like a Chronergy sort of thing. Now there's also Graviturgy, which is basically the ability to manipulate gravity and density of stuff. So you can yank people around, you're casting reverse gravity, doing all kinds of stuff like that, where you're just basically yeeting people up and down and all over the place. We have Order of the Scribes, and this is a magic of the book. So these are people, they get the Awakened Spellbook, which is super fun. So you essentially have a book that acts as almost like your familiar.
Yeah, it's like you're the geek, the uber geek of the geeks. You're the study.
Exactly. You're the one who's studying.
Right in your books.
And then we get into kind of, there are all these different schools of magic, right? So we get the abjuration. So that is basically the ability to block and banish things.
You protect stuff.
Yeah, you're sending people away, but you're protecting things, that sort of thing. You've got conjuration, that is the ability to produce objects and creatures basically out of thin air. So you're
make
you're
stuff
summoning
appear.
You're summoning, you're bringing stuff, you're making stuff appear. We have divination, which is seeing, you're clearly seeing into the future. You're a seer, you're a prognosticator.
Know all the stuff.
Fun thing about that is that gives you, you can roll, you roll 2d20s every time you finish along, and you just track those numbers, and you can substitute either of those roles.
Yeah, it's really powerful. Super powerful.
For your own roles or for other people's roles. So if somebody hit you with a crit and you have a nat one in your pocket with one of these, you can say, no, that crit is a nat one.
Yeah, really cool. Again, we talk about them being powerful, but they are really powerful.
Yes. There is enchantment. So that is the ability to enchant both people and objects.
Make things do stuff.
Make things do stuff. Yeah, exactly. And by things, it's everything.
Yeah,
it's everything. Do stuff. There's evocation. This is the fireball. This
destroy is stuff.
Spells. You're blowing stuff up. You're basically you're like collecting the magic and then shattering it into things. Illusion, as you would expect, the schools of illusion. These are more people who are a little more tricky.
This so might be the hardest one to play too, because a lot of those spells are very open ended.
It's so funny because like Major Image, I love Major Image as a spell. Major Image is a school of illusion spell, and a lot of different bards get it. A lot of different people can get it. It is such a tricky spell. You really have to negotiate with your DM.
Yeah,
be very smart.
You have to talk to your DM. I think anytime anybody plays any heavy illusion heavy character, you need to have a lot of conversations off out of game with your DM, like, about what you're going to try to do.
I've been like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to cast an illusion where this creature that's attacking us is just, I'm going to cast Major Image on top of them, and they're surrounded by a million mirrors, one-way mirrors facing in, so all they see is basically themselves. But they're also, it's also, there's a lot of like save or suck.
That's really it.
It's like if they can see through illusions, you don't have it. You don't have anything.
Well, and also it really depends on how your DM plays it, right? Like your DM can also make it go away just by moving the character sometimes. So it's like, it's makes stuff seem like other stuff.
Yes. Makes. Then we have, in that vein, I'll jump to the school of transmutation, which is make stuff into other stuff.
Yeah, right. Change stuff into other stuff, right? Like literally rather than seem.
Yeah, literally. So this is alchemy adjacent. So these are people that are doing all kinds of stuff. And then lastly, or not quite lastly, we have the school of necromancy, which is
Do creepy stuff.
You're raising the dead. You are literally the dude who wants to become a lich probably at some point down the line. And then there's one last one, which is war magic. And war magic is really, these are basically wizards who are training to fight, and that's so they're not like less research oriented and more combat oriented. So they have a little bit more in the way of better defenses, a little more.
So when I was thinking about this, Andy, I was thinking, just to keep it relatively straightforward and focused, there are a lot of different racial traits that play with fire, and there's a lot of characters that we can talk about that are sort of fire oriented. And well, it's very simple, and we could also talk about doing a necromancer. I almost feel like we just build like a, maybe not a war wizard, but an evocation wizard, and really focus on the fire and the blowing stuff up. Yeah, let's do
it. I think that sounds...
it's a pretty easy entrance into wizarding.
Yes, for sure. That sounds perfect.
Let's so we're going to make a Zuko or, you know, something from the Fire Nation. Yeah. And we're going to blow stuff up with fire. Yeah. So I there are a couple of different places that we could start. We'll start with the very obvious one, but then I'll throw out a few others that might maybe at the race level might not be in top consideration, but could be really interesting. Right off the bat, we could start with a fire genasi and just go straight up. I'm a fire. Right. I'm a creature of fire. Therefore, right. I am all about the fire.
Right.
Would be very straightforward, very simple. Might be the place to go just because it'd be so straight down the line. But there are some other races that we could consider in this mix of fire-oriented. And one I'll throw out there is an elf, because we could do, or an Eladrin to be specifically, you could do a summer court Eladrin, because when they do their phase step, each creature of your choice that you can see within 5 feet takes five fire damage equal to your proficiency bonus. So it'd be another so very interesting elf way into the fire concept. Yeah. And what made me think about this one is I was thinking about, have you ever read ElfQuest?
Not for a long time.
The comic book from a long time ago. Great comic book, by the way. You could do a summer Eladrin, right? Like, because I could think about those characters like desert elves, which would fit in the Shattered Chasm, is also why I was thinking about it.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I hadn't
really thought about that. So desert elves. And then, of course, you know, we could also choose something like a dragonborn, which would also be right in the pocket. You could choose sort of a red dragonborn who comes from a chromatic history and fire. So those were the three that sort of jumped out at me as, like, if we were doing fire, would be all interesting flavors.
So just to speak kind of like past history to now, like, since they've changed the racial bonuses and how the racial bonuses are handled, you know, in the past, it was very difficult to justify, like, say, creating like a dwarven
wizard, for sure,
right? Yeah. You know, because the way the racial bonuses went, it was very difficult to get into to get to that high intelligence that you wanted.
You would have to build a broken character to begin with in order to get there, which was always sort of daunting to start with.
Yeah. So, which was one of the things that helped kind of separate it, but it also meant that if you were going to play a wizard, you were always going to be a human. You were always going to be a half elf or an elf. Like, really, you were in those lanes. But the more I think about it, I think let's do the fire genasi. I think
straight down the middle. I love it.
Yeah, I think it feels right. It's like, and we haven't talked that much about the genasi.
Exactly. It's a race we haven't built at all. Yeah. So I'll do a quick maybe read of the fire genasi. So, you know, you trace your ancestry to the histories of the elemental planes. So, like, this character, whoever they are, they come from a tribe that is elementally focused, which is perfect for this idea of a fire wizard, right? They're searching for the truth of their ancestry and the magic of their ancestors, right? Like, that's how I see it. Like, that's what they're searching for. So they tend to live about a century. So, like, sort of normal human lifespan. They're about the size of humans, maybe red colored, and sometimes maybe red hair or even fiery hair can set them apart as how they look. They have 30-foot walking speed. They have dark vision up to 60 feet. They have resistance to fire straight off the bat. Now, if we go towards evocation, they were going to get that anyway, but it seems doesn't matter. Like, let's just go straight into this fire resistance thing. Where it really works well with a fire and an evocation build is produce flame cantrip. And starting at third level, you can cast Burning Hands. Then at fifth level, you can also cast Flame Blade without a material component. And once you cast Burning Hands or Flame Blade, so third level for Burning Hands, fifth level for Flame Blade, you can cast you have to do a long rest to cast them again. So you get the spell. You
essentially get a free cast of those spells. And as we talk about, like, the action economy of wizards, spell slots become a huge thing. We haven't talked too much about spell slots, but that is the mechanic that constrains wizards over time, in the same way that barbarians have limited rages or bards have a limited number of bardic inspirations. As a caster, wizards have a lot of spell slots, more than a lot of the other casters do, but they are limited by them. And, you know, so they are, you know, and they don't get them back on a short rest the way, like, a warlock does. They need a good solid rest to get them back. So as you're a DM setting up a campaign where you have wizards or many wizards or even a few wizards, understand that they get into that resource thing where they don't want to spend a lot of their high level spells because they might need them in the future.
That's right.
But it's very,
and they never cast them.
They never cast them. Yeah, exactly.
But so having a couple of good low level spells that don't use your spell slots is brilliant.
Yeah.
So the next step, I think, so we've got our fire genasi. They come from this tradition. They're searching for the magic of their ancestors or their heritage, and they've got a couple of nice little features. The only thing that I want to say before we can talk about abilities in a second, but when we talk about class, the only decision I think we need to make is, are we doing 100% wizard straight up to 8th level, or, and there's really only one multi-class that makes sense given what we're trying to do.
Right.
We could consider that maybe this character started life as an artificer because it still stays within that intelligence. And maybe they are a tinkerer, a magical tinkerer in their tribe. And then they realize that there's bigger magic out there. And now they want to go pursue finding all the magic. I throw that out there just as we've already done those sort of blade wizard with blade singer. You could go into fighter. There are a lot of other great multi-classes. But I think if we want to stay in the pocket of a wizard spellcaster, artificer is on the table only because they're so clearly a magic maker. And they get to make magic items, which is also pretty freaking cool.
I'm inclined, since we're not doing an enchantment, I think we were doing something that's maybe a little more enchantment focused than having that like artificer school of enchantment lineup would make sense. And that's like making things. I'm inclined to just keep it like, let's just build this as like kind of a pure wizard.
Love it.
I think multi-classing is one of those things. Multi-classing is a lot of fun, and you know, clearly we do it all the time, but it does introduce like a lot of complexity in terms of your decision making around.
Let's keep it building. We're building a simple character that just blows stuff up with fire.
Yeah,
let's stick it right. I thought I'd throw it out there.
Guys, I'm here to see the world burn.
Right, fire is great.
Yeah,
fire is life.
Yeah, it renews everything. Yeah. This character is a war crime in the making.
Everybody. Oh my God. Fire is life. It would be like from
awesome.
From Ted Lasso instead of soccer. Football is life. It's like, fire is life. All right. So we've got a straight wizard, first level. Anything we need to know about a first level wizard, Andy?
So first level, we're going to pick some proficiencies. So basically, your stock proficiencies as wizards, no armor proficiencies. Guys, you're not going to be wearing a lot of armor. Weapons proficiencies, also low. You're going to carry a dagger. Maybe you'll have some darts or a sling. You might have a quarterstaff or at best, a light crossbow. You get, as you would expect, you're proficient in like intelligence and wisdom. And you get to choose a couple of proficiencies from Arcana. So Arcana is anything related to magic. History is what it is. Insight, investigation, medicine, and religion. I think it's a no-brainer to pick when you're picking proficiencies. You have to pick Arcana.
Yeah. You're expected to know magic things. So
you're expected to know magic things. And so when you think about making checks related to magic, you're the guy that the party is going to ask. It can be fun not to have that, have backed into it. And maybe you don't know that much about magic. You're working from spell books.
I feel like that's more, not knowing anything from magic is more of a sorcerer thing. Like you could it'd be a lot funnier to have a sorcerer who really doesn't understand why they can do anything.
Yeah, so I'm inclined to go for like Arcana, and we haven't put together our stats yet, but I would say like Arcana and history, or Arcana and maybe investigation is the other intelligence oriented.
Let's hold on this one until we get a little fine tuned on the character, but I agree, it's either intelligence or history or investigation for me too. I think once we know a little bit more about this character, we can decide which way they lean, but both would be good. I'm still seeing this character as like coming from a tradition of fire, and it's like out there trying to find the lost secrets of their clan or something. Yes. So either one of those would fit
just,
well.
Just trying to find more fire. Like I need learn more about more fire.
There is greater fire power out there, and I'm going to find it.
I am achieving mastery. We had a campaign with Peter and some of his friends where one of his friends was playing a gnome wizard who was an evocation wizard, and was just his end goal was actually to burn the entire world. He wanted to consume the entire world in fire like that. So he'd be like, what do you want to do? He's like, well, I'm going to burn everything, you know, so.
Right.
Very challenging.
Oh my God.
So
here we go.
Pretty fun. You also get, as a student of arcane magic, you have a spell book. That spell book contains all of the magic that you, basically all the spells that you know. There are a lot of rules that we don't necessarily need to get into in terms of like how long and what it costs to copy different levels of spells into your spell book, which can be like, that is one of the reasons, like if you watch Critical Role in season 2, Caleb was always looking for fine paper. He literally was needed to add more pages to his spell book in order to scribe all these things. You can't learn a spell unless you can copy it into your spell book, basically.
Right.
That act is what lets you learn the spell. And you have cantrips, which are essentially 0-level spells, and then you have leveled spells, which go, leveled spells start at 1 and go to 9. And as you would imagine, the higher level they are, the more powerful they are, and the fewer spell slots you have for those. I'm not going to get too much into all the stuff related to spell books, other than to say that you get one and it's pretty good. And then you also get, you get your spell book, and then you get a thing called arcane recovery. Once per day, when you finish a short rest, you can choose to, essentially it's like a hit dice for your spells. You can regain a couple of spell slots that you might otherwise not be able to get. For example, if you're a 4th level wizard, you can recover up to 2 levels worth of spell slots. So you could recover 1 2nd level spell slot or 2 1st level spell slots. Mm-hmm. If you were an 8th level wizard, then you would get 4 levels of spells back. That's sort of, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a 1st level spell.
They're right. A little complicated, and guys. I think when we think about just the first level, you get 3 cantrips.
Yeah.
So I think just for flavor wise, it would be, we might even avoid some of the more obvious ones and literally just go control flames, can create bonfire and firebolt.
Yes.
Right. Fire. Yeah. Right. Now that is a little
selection
limiting.
Is like the fun part.
Yeah. It's a little bit limiting because you don't have prestidigitation or mage hand or light. But again, I think that's the whole point of this character is let's just make them a little one-sided for a while until they start to learn the value of everything else.
Yes. Exactly.
And then the other thing that's interesting about the way wizards work that's different than everyone else is that they learn spells and they can swap out other spells. As Andy was saying, they have to put spells into their spell book. So there's an economy, and we're not going to get into the deep economy. There's economy around learning skills, paying for them, transcribing them into your books. It's like you have to go spend your downtime practicing the spell. So it costs money to use the ingredients to practice the spell, and then you learn the spell and you put it in your spell book. So and
again,
it's really the thing you have to work on with your DM is finding spells and finding the information around spells. Now, this can be a lot of fun with a DM that takes it seriously.
Yeah.
Because you could have a DM that says, there are no charm spells in this world, or at least charm spells, because they're so manipulative, are looked down on. So if you want to learn any charm spell, you're going to have to go seek it out. And then that becomes a little quest where you go seek out the charm spells.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that's also interesting, again, sort of old school versus new school. Old school, you didn't learn spell slots. Like, you learned specific spells.
Yeah.
And so you had a certain number of spells that you could memorize per day. And so you were spending your downtime literally like memorizing things out of your spell book. And you know, you were holding them in your mind during the day. And then if you chose to cast Fireball, you had to have memorized not just prepared the spell, but you had to like literally have memorized that spell. And then once you used Fireball, unless you had essentially memorized it twice, you were not going to be able to use it again. There were a lot of, the spells were frankly probably more powerful than they are now, but also it was very easy to have decided you were going to memorize a spell and then go for that whole session and never use that spell because, oh, I memorized Find Traps, and but I didn't need Find Traps. And then there were no traps, right? Or I memorized, you know, and
you do have
and,
to,
and you couldn't like hot swap them so much as you can now.
I think as a DM, you either give your characters some clues as to what they might need, or you pay attention, or you'd certainly pay attention to what spells they've learned. So again, so that you can help them find some scrolls or whatever. It makes the magic item selection for a wizard very compelling if they find a scroll or a spell book or something else that allows them to learn a number of spells. Now, they're going to spend their gold to learn those spells, but it's still like it makes DMing a wizard something different than DMing a lot of other classes. All right, so let's move up to level 3.
Let's do abilities and then we'll jump back to running through
it. Ability score in person. So we'll do the +2/+1 for our racial options.
Yes, we can do +2/+1.
And then we're doing manual with our custom array of 17, 15, 13, 12, 10, 8. Andy, what do we put 17 in?
17 is going to go into intelligence.
Yes,
I think.
Agreed. And what's the second most important stat for wizards in general?
I'm going to say, personally, I'm going to say constitution.
Yeah. It's sort of a counterintuitive. What's kind of interesting in fifth edition is that constitution is so important because maintaining concentration on your spells is so important that wizards, despite having the lowest number of hit points, usually have reasonably high con saves because of it.
We picked one mental stat and one physical stat.
Yep.
Now we're getting into those are our two highest. Now we have 8, 10, 13, and 12 left.
Yep.
I usually will pick my two highest and then I'll go back and pick my two lowest and sort of figure out,
from there. I think that's the right way to go.
I'm going to make a pitch for our dump stat to be wisdom.
Okay.
I love playing high intelligence, low wisdom characters.
I love it.
Because they're freaking hilarious.
I think it's pretty good.
They make poor social interaction choices, which is, you think about this character as like a fire obsessed nerd.
And fire resistant. Right? So it's like
he doesn't understand that, that he's burning stuff all the time. He's like, we need a fire. Great. And it's like a huge bonfire you got blisters. Well, that's weird. Why would you get one of those? That you could play this character is kind of
picking up pans from the fire.
Just straight out of the fire. Yeah. Okay. I'm cooking everybody. And it's all just like charred because it's always too hot.
I dig it into it. Then maybe strength is the 10. Maybe.
Yeah. Strength is probably the 10.
Then we've got a 13 and a 12 for dex or charisma. I kind of feel like I want this character to be a little bit charismatic.
Yeah. I kind of think the same thing. It's okay. I think the redeeming quality of his
charming
wisdom is that he's charming. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Earnest. And it's still +1/+1. Doesn't really matter.
And if we were building a sorcerer wizard or some other combination, it might be when you think about some of your.
That's right. It gives you some option for multi-classing down the road to warlock or something like that.
Exactly. Just to have a little bit of charisma.
So we've got a 10 in strength, a 12 in dexterity, a 15 in con, a 17 in intelligence, a 8 in wisdom, and a 13 in charisma. And we still have a +2/+1 to give out. +2 is obviously going to intelligence. Yes.
Yep.
So we're at a 19 intelligence now. Where's our +1 going?
Honestly, if we take the 15 to a 16, that gets us to the next threshold.
Yeah, I think it does.
So I think we should take the con up to
16.
Up to 16.
I think.
Now, and as we think in the future with our ASIs, like our first ASI, we probably could get like a mixed one that has like intelligence, +1 intelligence.
I think that's some the way stuff, to go.
Yep. And then I'll get our intelligence up to 20.
Yep.
And then the rest of the stuff, it is what it is.
We're very good. We're in a good place here. Do we know anything to finish out and wrap out our proficiency based on what we've talked about so far? I kind of feel like maybe investigation might be better than history, because if they're low wisdom, then they haven't learned anything from the past.
Yes, but they're hyper-focused.
Hyper-focused. Right. Yeah. So we've gone back to our proficiency that we got at first level, and we've made it investigation. So they're really good at finding things, which also fits with this character. All right, let's jump up to third level.
We get our arcane tradition. Arcane tradition, which is clearly going to be the school of evocation.
That's right.
Burn, baby, burn. What do we get from that? Specifically, if we find evocation spells to add into our book, the cost and time to copy those into our books, we're really good with fire magic, guys. We are able to get those into our book very quickly, which is great. And then we also get the ability to sculpt spells, which is super useful. Again, so you're not fireballing your own party. Basically, you can create pockets of relative safety within the effects of these spells, and you can choose a number of them equal 1+ your spell's level, and those creatures automatically succeed on their saving throws, and they take no damage if they would normally take half damage on a successful.
Yeah, that's great.
It's very funny because there's part of me that is there was always a quandary of, I'm going to just blow up and sorry, guys, you're in the middle of it, but this is the thing I'm going to do. Their sculpt spells is, I understand why it's in the game. There's part of me that's always, maybe at a higher level you get sculpt spells, but like the ability to blow your party to pieces is funny.
It's only +1 the spell's level, right? So
So if you're in a big party, you're gonna blow some people up. You're in a smaller party, then you just gotta be a little more careful about where you place your fireball.
Yeah,
not in a small room, guys. Not in a small room.
So we jump up to third level. Just real quick, we get, if we've done our optional class feature, we can, whenever you finish a long rest, you can reformulate your cantrips as well. So that's a cool feature that they've added in Tasha, so that you can,
that's right,
you can change around your cantrips as well as your regular spells. All right, moving up to we get our first choice. We get our ASI, ability score improvement, where we can choose either to improve 2 points of our abilities, or we can choose a feat. I think we choose feat.
I think we choose clearly. Yeah, I think we're going.
Now, this is where it gets interesting, Andy, because I think there are a bunch of different feats that make sense from a min-maxer level, but there's one in particular that makes a lot of sense flavor-wise.
Yes.
I think it's
I was going to talk about some of the way the feats work with.
Oh, you go for that first, and then I'll throw out the one that makes the most flavor sense.
Some of the things that get really useful is having, if you're creating a wizard who's casting a lot of concentration spells, if you're a war wizard, if you feel like you're maybe going to be in combat or something, having war caster is almost a must have. That is like, it is just a soup. And that is true for a lot of the different casters. Yeah. Like if you're a bard, but really if you think that you're going to end up with a spell list that has a fair number of concentration spells, you should really think hard.
Bards are almost a mandatory in some ways, just because bards have so many concentration spells.
Yeah, exactly.
You can also take the enhanced constitution one, that helps too.
Yes. Yes. There are some other ones that I think are always interesting to look at, depending on how you want to build a character. Like taking metamagic, even as a wizard, is interesting
because it
gives you really spell slots and some other options there.
Cool things.
Yeah.
And particularly the ones that are the most interesting are the twin spell or even just if you're
like quicken spell, like the ability to like quicken spell.
Quicken spell is also really
pretty interesting.
Also the warlock one, being able to get an invocation, a warlock invocation. Is interesting, particularly for this character, might be really, really curious.
Other ones that are like people might have seen, again, just to refer to Critical Role, like that character Caleb had Keen Mind. Keen Mind would bump our intelligence up to 20. Mm-hmm. You always know which way is north. You always know the time. And you can accurately recall anything you've seen or heard within the past month. So, which eliminates
very the flavorful. For you
to, very flavorful.
Yeah.
Eliminates the needs for notes. You can always just make the DM say, hey, I heard this within a month. What did I hear? And the fact that you can't get lost and you're never going to, your time sense.
Yeah, I'm really into Key Mind. It's pretty fun. It's near the top of my list.
Again, it's sort of a flavor one. There is also, I'm just looking at some of these other ones. There's like Elemental Adept.
Right. Fire. So
there we go.
Hit on the thing that I think from a flavor perspective, even though it doesn't get our intelligence up to a 20, I kind of feel like the way we've built this character, the Elemental Adept Fire is the way to go flavor-wise, because you can ignore resistance to fire damage, which is if we're all about fire and blowing things up, we don't want anybody with fire resistance messing up our plans.
Yes.
We have fire that burns hotter than anything they've ever seen.
So this is the blue flame.
That's
of Zuko, rather than the red flame of
everyone Azula. Else.
Yeah.
Oh no, Azula has
Azula had the blue flame.
And Zuko has to learn it.
Learned it. Yes. So the blue, it is that. But that's the thing is you're casting that you're much more intense about that.
And that's where I'm leaning just from the flavor perspective, because it just feels right.
I think that makes a ton of sense. Just give it. But
the other ones to consider would be like Smell Sniper is always a something for wizards to consider. I always like Fey Touch and Shadow Touch, just because again they add additional spells that don't need spell slots, and they're all both half feats. So we might consider them next down the line when we want to increase our intelligence at 8th level to a 20.
So one of the things that's also out there, I haven't looked at them a ton, but there's the Strixhaven stuff, which are all about magical
schools. Those are all really good. We could take a look at them. Let's take a look at them when we get to 8th level.
Yeah.
I think on flavor, Elemental Adept is the way to go for 100%. this character so far.
I agree.
All right. We're up to 4th level. We're doing some interesting stuff. Do we want to talk at all about some of the spells? Why don't you pick 2 spells that you think are absolutely must-haves for this character at 4th level. We get 4 cantrips and 8 prepared spells. We have an infinite number of spells that we can learn, but that's you have to have a lot of money for that, and your DM has to have been giving you spells to learn.
By virtue of our background, we by default have Produce Flames, Burning Hands, which is a great spell. You imagine you've got Flamethrower Hands. It's essentially what it is. Flame Blade, you're essentially got a lightsaber out of your hands. That's actually great, because not having a lot of proficiencies in other melee stuff. And if you, as a wizard, end up in a place where all of a sudden you're having to fight in melee, having the ability to cast Flame Blade and use that is great. As we think about other, and so we had, you said we had taken Control Flames and Firebolt.
Yeah, the cantrips I think are pretty straightforward, and we can now we can swap them out. So if we really need something, we can learn something else. At second level, we got the ability to do that. Yeah. Or third level, we got the ability.
So spells that I think are probably absorb elements might be an interesting one to take.
I think this character is all about, like, they're just, it's in their nature. To, particularly, like, they take other elements. Like, yes, they are fire-based, but they can absorb other elemental element stuff. I think that's super on flavor.
Another first level spell that I would probably think about for this character would be Chromatic Orb.
Yep.
I think that's an evocation spell. You're casting, it's essentially like a mini fireball that's blasting stuff out. Other go-tos, we could talk about it. Find Familiar is also like a classic one.
Yeah, having like a little fiery imp or just any even just a little tiny phoenix maybe might be really interesting.
And the nice thing about the familiars are super useful. You can use them to give the help action. They let you do exploring and seeing.
You can you can cast any spell with touch.
Yes, and if you have touch, they can cast a touch spell through the familiar.
Yep.
Which again is also very useful for all of a sudden you have range with your touch spells. So the School of Evocation doesn't have a lot of touch spells, but it is super useful to have something like that. Expeditious Retreat basically just gives you enhanced movement. It lets you zoom around the battlefield a little bit more, which again, when you have we're going to have a low AC, we're just stuck there. Having some mobility can be really useful.
I think the one that's really useful with the in combination with the Find Familiar that you would want to consider is Dragon's Breath. And while it's duplicative of Burning Hands, you could give it to somebody else. You can give somebody else the ability to do a fire breath, which would be pretty cool.
There are a lot of spells, guys, and there's some you want to take Mage Armor, a different build. Shield. You might take Shield. You might a different build. You might take Magic Missile, because again, that's one of the few spells that scales. You know, when you cast Magic Missile at like the ninth level, I mean, it's essentially a machine gun. I mean,
it's also great for getting rid of somebody else's concentration. Yep. Like if you're fighting other wizards, because every time they get hit, they have to roll a concentration check. And while it might not be a high one,
unless they cast Shield, which will automatically blocks all magic missile. But it is part of that wizarding duel kind of scenario that you might see.
I think we've hit the main ones. I think the only other one that I might throw out there just as an example of how you could flavor something is something like Vortex Warp, which is a conjuration spell, but I've seen it used incredibly well lately, where you bring the one baddie that you can't get at, you bring them closer to you so your tanks can engage with it. But you could flavor it in such a way where it's a little burst of flame and they disappear, and then another little burst of flame and they appear close to you. There's just ways to flavor these spells in that don't have a damage type, but flavor them in the concept of fire.
Right. I'm going to pitch it out there. It's not always the most useful spell, but it is within that sort of vein of this character's pyrotechnics.
Oh, I think absolutely.
Which is super fun. You can basically create fireworks and or fog cloud-esque. The nice part about this version of fog cloud is it doesn't require you to keep concentrating on it. It will just stay, you know, until it gets blown away.
Yeah, I love it. I think those are great. Gust of Wind would be good. Yeah. Just they're fanning the flames. There's a lot of good spells out there. We won't go into all of them, but I think we're on the right track now.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's jump up. So we're at fourth level, the next big level, and possibly the biggest change to this character, just conceptually for all wizards, is level 5 because of access to third level spells. And there's so many good third level spells.
And that's where Fireball shows up and a lot of the kind of classic evocation spells. At sixth level, we get Potent Cantrip. Your damaging cantrips affect even creatures that avoid the brunt of the effect. When they succeed on a saving throw against your cantrip, they now take half damage, but no other additional effects. So this just is, when you think about a spell like Firebolt or some of the cantrips, typically when you save on a cantrip, there's no effect. Now all of a sudden your cantrips are punchier than others. So, which again fits in the vein of this like elemental adept and all the rest.
What we've done is we've created a character that's really focused on, you can always choose the other things that are going to be about utility. Yes. But early on when you play this character, they are really going to be fire. And that's a lot of fun. We've talked about what Sculpt Spells does, Potent Cantrip also then does what Elemental Adept did for us, which is now all of our fire stuff, all the blowing stuff up that we want to do is both more effective and a little bit more useful because it's less risky to our compatriots.
Right.
All right.
So, seventh level, we get access to our first fourth level spells. Right. And this seventh level character got 4 first level spell slots, 3 second level spell slots, 3 third level spell slots, and a fourth level spell slot. So if you think of a typical combat taking 3 rounds, if you've shown up to the combat, you've already cast mage armor, you're down a slot, you still have close to 10 spell slots of varying levels, of varying degrees of power that you're going to be able to put out there to do some pretty interesting stuff. And fourth level spells are some fun.
And 2 very flavorful fire spells in particular, in Wall of Fire, which is just absolutely an amazing spell.
Yeah,
I just, spell. Again, saw it used just this week in one of my games where the wizard managed to sneak it around some party members and knock out 7 out of the 9 guys that were attacking them with the Wall of Fire. It was really impressive.
Yeah.
And then summon Elemental, which I think, well, again, another conjuration spell, very on flavor for this character to be able to summon a fire elemental.
I'm going to bring more fire.
Right. And you can see that as like maybe summoning their ancestors, right? Like that would be a really cool way to flavor
that would be cool.
Right.
Like, I'm calling my auntie.
So, and then Fire Shield, although I don't know how useful it would be, but it's still, again, really, really cool, flavorful spell. So, Jen, really cool stuff happening.
And I would also say, as you're thinking about other, maybe you don't want to have, if you're creating this character, you can also dig into it and find spells that are adjacent and then reflavor them into this.
Exactly.
So it's particularly spells that are not doing damage.
That's it. Like I described with Vortex Warp, it doesn't have to be a vortex. It could be a puff of smoke. You can change it in any way you want as long as you're not messing with the mechanics. Another cool one that might be fun, Andy, that I've never actually considered but might be really fun flavor-wise at fourth level is Minor Elementals, where you get to conjure a whole bunch of them. Right. So you could get you could have 8 steam methods.
So
it just could be silly.
Fun. This is the thing where you end up in the wizards are one of those characters that break DMs because as all casters 8 are, summon right?
Characters.
You know, like all of a sudden, I'm going to bring this guy here. I'm going to bring all of a sudden you've got
or 4 magma methods.
Yeah. Then they have to be like, oh, what? That you can go from one person, you can effectively double the size of your party or more in terms of the number of and bring the action economy even more to yourself, to the party's advantage by just piling on.
I've always used personally when I've used things, I've never used summon minor elementals, but the way I would use one of the uses would be is if you're trying to escape, you drop the 4 elementals there. They can cover a pretty good bit of ground and that should give your party time to escape. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a great escape vehicle, particularly if you don't have teleportation spells and things like that.
Right.
All right. Well, that's seventh level. We've got a really powerful little wizard here. But eighth level, we get our last little bit of just absolute freakishly goodness in our last ASI. Again, I think we go with a feat, right?
Yeah, I mean, we get ASIs. So we got one at fourth level. We'll get another one at 12th, 16th, and 19th level. So, I mean, like pretty significant. Yeah, I mean, I think we go feat again. I mean, it's still, 19 intelligence is still great.
So I think the ones to go for is anything that's a half feat where we can get our 19 intelligence to a 20. And so we talked about Keen Mind, which is just a really good one. I think this is one where if you are playing this character up, you might see what's happening in the game and make a choice. Keen Mind is really quite flavorful and fun. I think the other choices are that we talked about would be like Fey Touched or Shadow Touched, which would give us either Fey Step and then a first level spell that we can use, again, saving us a spell slot.
Yeah.
Or Shadow Touch, which also gives us a different selection of spells. The other ones to consider, although I don't think we're going to choose them, Andy, you had mentioned Meta Magic Adept.
Yes.
Really, really, really good. Particularly because you can also choose that one that lets you reflavor any spell into fire, which would be really neat. But you could also choose Eldritch Adept, which then lets you choose some of the invocations from the warlocks. I think Eldritch Mind might be good because that allows you to get an equivalent of Warcaster, but Warcaster's better. Devil Sight is really the standout, I think, in that group, which just lets you see in the dark even magical darkness, which might be really neat on this character. But I think we choose, unless you look at the Strixhavens, I don't think the Strixhavens are half feats though. They just give you more spells.
Same thing with Ritual Caster. If you look at Ritual Caster, you get to basically, you get a whole bunch of ritual. It basically just adds to your spell book.
Yeah, but it lets you maybe choose, as a wizard, you could get access to some cleric spells or bard spells or druid spells. So the interesting thing here is that you could get Thaumaturgy or Sacred Flame out of these, which could be interesting. Again, it's not a happy.
I'm gonna pitch one out there. What about telepathic?
I'm into that. That's a really good additional. So let's see, flavor wise, how does this work? I like it. I'm into it.
I choose
it a lot. So it as a good half feat that gives us another bump to intelligence, wisdom, or charisma. Yeah. Why does this character? What have they learned?
So this is one of those things where I think this is where I always like head scratch about adding Fey Touch later in a character versus in a character build versus something like this. Telepathic to me is maybe they have discovered something in a book somewhere or something else that unlocks this realization around
that they always had this ability.
Yeah. Right? Or that they've literally learned it and now they're manifesting the fire in their internal fire of their mind.
I like it.
And they can evoke that in someone else's mind and it doesn't do damage. It just allows them to like whisper through the heat of their body or something like that.
Yeah. So, I like it. I like it. As long as we have a flavorful way to do it, I love it late. I think Fey Touch would always be like you coming out to a Fey creature who gives you the thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think this gives you the ability to speak telepathically to any creature within 60 feet. They can't necessarily respond to you, but you can at least tell them things, which is very useful. And then you also you can cast the Detect Thoughts spell with no spell slot or components.
That's really powerful.
Once per day, which is super useful. And if then it just gets added to your, so you can also burn spell slots to cast that again if you want to as well.
Yeah. So I think it's good because it also gets us that half feat. So we get our intelligence. So let's do a review. Since we just upped our abilities, we're at a 10 strength, 12 dex, 16 con, 20 intelligence, which really helps just about everything, particularly our attacking, gives us a +5. Then an 8 wisdom and a 13 charisma. We are an evocation fire genasi with a lot of really cool things that we can do. We've got elemental adept, so our fire ignores resistance. We've got a little bit of mind trickery where we can read people's minds and cast detect thoughts and communicate with our party. This makes us really powerful.
Yeah, we've got almost 60 hit points, which is pretty good for a pure wizard. With mage armor, I think we can get our AC probably up around 14, 15. Mm-hmm. And then I think we can, you know, if you cast shield, you know, you can at least you can get it up high enough to survive some pretty big hits early on. And if you have the right magic items, whether cloak of protection, ring of protection, those sorts of things, you can increase your overall AC. But the big thing is we have a +8 spell attack bonus. So it's a +8 on any spell attack that we're doing. And we have a 16 save DC, which is pretty good. That is.
And even if they save, they're still taking half damage.
Right.
And if they have fire resistance, they're still taking half damage.
So yeah, you know, we're the fire giant who is normally laughing off fire damage is all of a sudden going like, ow, that hurt. What the hell? You know?
And we've got four cantrips always prepared. We've got 13 spells prepared, which is a pretty good number. Yeah. You can lean into the fire as much as you want at this point. But at 8th level, you've maybe learned a few more tricks in your bags. You start to learn other things. You realize that there's other magic out there maybe that is powerful and useful. Good. We've got a great list of spells that we can choose from. We've mentioned off some of the really cool ones. Another one that you could also flavor that would be really interesting is Evard's Black Tentacles, but you flavor it as fiery fire tendrils reaching up.
For sure.
Another good spell. You can also take advantage of Vampiric Touch at this point with your familiar. That would be another interesting play to get some healing.
Yep. We have 2 fourth level spell slots.
We get Polymorph. We can do Wall of Fire. We can do Summon Greater Demon. That's interesting. Summon Elemental.
Yeah.
All sorts of fun, fiery things from our history and our background. And then and coming up at 10th level, right on the interest is that we get Empowered Evocation, where at 10th level, we can add our Intelligence Modifier to 1 damage roll of any evocation spell we power. So that's +5 damage. at some point down the road. So just really, really good stuff, blowing stuff up. That's what we're going to do. And we get all the advantages of being a wizard. It's like not only blowing stuff up.
And I just wanted to put it out there. There's the capstone ability right now. You get it 20th level.
Yeah.
You gain mastery over two powerful spells, and can cast them with little effort. Choose 2 third level wizard spells from your spellbook as your signature spells. They're always prepared. They don't count against the number of spells you have prepared, and you can cast them, each of them, once at the third level without expending a spell slot. Oh,
fireball
and something else, and boom. And you just tossing those off without even thinking about it. You know, I mean,
it's good.
Again, you're like literally that guy with the staff. You know, you've got your arcane focus, your staff, or your wand in the red robes, you know, fire blowing all around you, going like, oh, fireball that guy.
Your fire starter.
Yeah, you're doing those big epic scenes where one guy's fighting an army by blowing them all up. That's you.
That's right. That's you. Yeah. What is this character's name, Andy? We've got this fire genasi who's got all this stuff.
What is his name? Part of me is like Fuego. According to Mama Natural, there are fire names for boys blazing with style. I mean, we never really talked about this fire genasi is a man or a woman, but Aiden, those both are like Gaelic. Aiden is Gaelic for fire, which is kind of a good and kind of interesting. Blaze, Aiden Blaze. Johnny Blaze, everybody. We've made Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze. We could do Cole.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Like Cole, we could spell it C-O-L-E or C-O-A-L. Yeah.
I like Cole. I like Cole a lot.
So Cole something. Oh, what about Cole Ignatius?
Oh, I like it. Cole Ignatius.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, I like that.
C-O-A-L?
I think it's C-O-L-E.
C-O-L-E.
Cole Ignatius, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good, right? It's like...
Yeah, I dig it.
It's very literal, but also a little subtle.
Yeah, and let's be fair. We've made a pretty literal character.
A super literal character. All right. Well, that was fun, Andy. We got a good wizard down. We give you a sample build, a little bit of spell flavor. Yeah. We didn't labor over the spell choices we could have, but like that's with wizards, that's just a lot.
Yeah.
You could spend hours.
And again, we talked about it before. It's like, you know, there's a lot of decision making in wizards around making sure that you've got what's in your spell book, and then also what are you actually preparing for that day?
And then
what you're going to cast in the moment.
I think if you're going to start for your first wizard, think along these lines. Now, you don't have to do what we did, but think simple, because it will get complex no matter what you do. But if you have a fairly straightforward idea, it really guides you towards certain spells, which helps limit. Yeah. You say at least half my spells are chosen for me because they align with my concept, right?
Yes.
Makes it a little bit easier.
That is an amazing point. Wizards really benefit from having a conceptual model, an idea, like
they're so loose,
or something like, because you can do so much with them.
Yeah.
And if you try to do everything with a wizard, you end up with these like very unfocused and frankly not very useful characters. Yeah. As opposed to like, if you're creating an illusionist, lean into that.
Yeah.
If you're creating
a necromancer, lean into it.
And so you're really going to want to be focused. We picked all these evocation spells, but one of the reasons we picked all these evocation spells is because they work well with the theme. And they also, because we are an evocation wizard, we're getting all these like extra bonuses from it. If you were a necromancer and picking a bunch of evocation spells, you can still cast them, but you're just not going to be quite as good as an evocation wizard.
Right.
And
you might hurt your party and your friends. But then they're dead, and then you can raise them.
And then you raise them back up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So
thanks, everybody.
I will do the dad joke.
Okay.
All right, Andy, since we're in the wizard realm, Andy, I think one of the things that we have to always be careful of when you're a wizard is not getting sick. Because do you know what the most common cause of illness is among wizards?
No, Michael, I don't know what the
most... It's a staph infection, Andy.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. At some point, we should just talk about some of the magic items like the wizards get, because they get some cool ones. The staff of power and staff of magic are like so much fun.
So we have reinvigorated our broader social activation beyond Facebook. Yep. We are now on Instagram and the new Instagram product Threads. So you can find us in both those places. But what's the easiest way to find all the stuff you need to find out about us, Andy?
The easiest place to find us is to go on to our link tree, which is linktr.ee/thedadvantage, and you can find links to all of our socials there, as well as to like our Facebook group and those sorts of things. love it when you guys comment on stuff within there. If you can, it would be really helpful for us, for other people to find the show. If you could rate and review us on the pods, that's frankly, if you share it with your friends, tell everybody about us. But if you can rate and review, that's super helpful for us.
Especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, that has the biggest impact for us in terms of making us found.
Yes.
Yeah, please do that. Yeah. And Andy, I think you're going to be at a con.
Yes, I will. And Labor Day weekend, I will be at PAX West up in Seattle. If anyone is around, please stop by. You can find me at the Dodeca Donuts booth, where I will be hawking my wares as a wooden donut vendor that hold dice.
Right. Don't, not for eating, for dice.
Not for eating. Sugar and gluten-free, everyone.
You can have a donut next to your wooden dice donut, but make sure you bite into the right one.
And I also have coffee cup dice rollers, so you can have coffee and donuts at the table.
Donuts. Yes. Delicious, delicious. They are deliciously fun.
They are deliciously fun. Oh, man, deliciously fun. I'm going to add that to all my to all my marketing materials for Dodeca Donuts.
Deliciously fun.
Deliciously fun.
Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate you.
Same here. Really appreciate you guys. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.